When you sit down at a restaurant, you're usually faced with one of two kinds of menu. One is the super sparse, five dishes, barely any explanation of what's in there. You either need to ask the waiter or quietly Google whether stracciatella is a type of cheese or a type of carrot. Then there's the other kind of menu, the one laden with keys and symbols, grass-fed, vegetarian, dairy-free, locally sourced. It can be slightly overwhelming. And now there's a new category in the mix. As of July 1, all venues and outlets that sell ready-to-eat seafood will be required to have country of origin labels. Things like A for Australian, M for mixed, I for imported. And it's aimed at giving more information to the customer about what they're eating. But will this make you more likely to buy it? It could be a great way for restaurants to justify their prices, but will you fork out the cash? I'd love to hear from you. Would you prefer to know where your food is coming from? Does these sorts of labelling help you choose what you buy? And here with me is Dr. Paul Harrison, Head of Consumer Behaviour at Deakin University. He joins me fortnightly for our segment, Buy Beware. Paul, have you eaten a prawn yet today?
Have I had a prawn? That is the funniest question you should ask me, Tegan, because I refuse to eat prawns because I know what they eat and it freaks me out. So that's so funny. You should ask that.
If you don't like what prawns eat, Paul, I have terrible news about oysters and most other seafood.
Oh, no.
Okay, then. So seafood, maybe you're a bit of a line ball guy, but just in general, country of origin, how much is that a factor for you?
Look, it's probably not a huge factor for me in terms as a person who understands consumer behaviour. Sometimes, as I guess I like to, when the situation presents itself correctly, it is important. And I think one of the things that kind of comes up from this is that country of origin itself functions often as a cue for people to help them to make choices. And so, you know, if you're thinking about cars, for example, you'd say, well, if it's made in Europe, it's a better car kind of thing, just as a generic kind of idea. But I think what I find interesting about this idea of country of origin is that what people do is that they take this idea of country of origin and place it in a kind of category which says it will have a significant influence on consumer decision making. And all of the scientific research says that yes, it has an effect, but it's incredibly moderate and it's mostly unstable. And there's a whole bunch of moderators that sit around that that actually determine whether people will make a choice based on whether country of origin is one of the kind of factors that help them to make that choice.
That is very interesting. I think if I was a local producer, I would very much like country of origin to A, be on something and B, to be something that would affect people's buying habits, but you're telling me it's not.
Well, there's two parts to it, which is if you are the produce, you're the provider, you do want country of origin on it because you are proud of it. But for most consumers, there are the other factors that, I mean, things like product involvement. So high involvement products, things that people are thinking deeply about, country of origin will have an effect. So if people, you know, if we're talking seafood, if people have a really strong kind of understanding of seafood and different kind of elements of the sea and where they come from, then that cue is going to become quite salient. It's going to be a significant for them. But for a lot of people, and I was thinking about this, for a lot of people at your local fish and chip shop, it's low involvement. I want to get my chips and my fish kind of thing on a Friday night or whatever. Country of origin is going to have a very low effect. Things like, and this is what I found really interesting, is that things like people's perception of the actual quality of the product, so what we call inferred quality or cognitive elements, there's different consumers will have different levels of national attachment. Different consumers will have different levels of pride to their kind of national attachment. And then there's the alternative, which is animosity to the alternative country. And they will have a significant effect. But the big thing that always comes back to most consumer decision making is price and availability. So if you go into a shopping, if you go into a place to buy fish or something like that, and they only have, I don't know, salmon from another country, then you don't really, most people aren't going to say, well, I won't buy that because I'll walk around until I find Australian quality salmon. Tonight I'm making salmon, so I need it. It's these kinds of factors which will have the effect, not necessarily for everybody, the country of origin.
So you mentioned before the research that's been done here. What do we know about Australians' attitudes specifically?
Well, as a culture, Australians are very proud of Australian culture, but we also are also quite, I mean, I've always kind of thought we are compliant and so we follow rules and things like that. But we are also, we have been trained, and this is, you know, the ACCC is part of this, trained us to look for lower prices. So we're a little bit conflicted. So we like to say, and this is, I think this is the one, there's a gap between this idea of, you know, what we say and what we actually do. And the gap is quite significant. Most consumer regulation assumes that giving people lots of information about the country of origin or anything like that is important. And what we know from the research is that you can survey people and they will say that they have a high preference for information, but then when we look at their behaviour, the revealed preference is low. And there's a whole bunch of studies that have consistently shown Australians, people from all sorts of countries, say they want more information, more disclosure, country of origin, nutrition, ethical sourcing. But when we do eye tracking studies, when we do choice studies, people tend to be more focused on basically things like the pricing, where it's located, and it comes down to this idea of, we want to be the kind of person who makes informed choices more than the kind of person who does the cognitive work of making those types of positive choices.
So is there any point in having this stuff on packaging then?
I think, there probably is, and I think it's an interesting one, and you might kind of, you know, think that I'm fairly cynical about this, but what its actual goal, I think, is that it's not about necessarily getting consumers to make better choices. It's about satisfying a couple of different groups, including the industry itself, which has been lobbying for a very long time, about 15 years or so, to have this. And it also works for government to say, we are a responsive government. We are listening to what the industry is asking us to do. But if we're being really honest, and an honest way to think about this is that the effects of that type of labelling are very marginal. The empirical research says that it's weak, but it does satisfy the industry lobby. It satisfies the idea that government's responding. And in the end, you know, that's probably a better outcome than it is for necessarily saying the types of things that you would actually need to do to get consumers to change their preference and change their choices, which would kind of push up against this idea of the nanny state. And this is the argument that, you know, somebody like me who works in consumer behaviour and regulation is sometimes consumer regulation is about what is possible as opposed to what we want to achieve. And, you know, in reality, we live in a kind of, I guess, a political environment, which is consumers should have choice. And therefore, you know, if we want them to make good choices, we give them information, but information itself is not very effective at changing behaviour.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Dr. Paul Harrison. He joins me fortnightly for our chat that I call Buyer Beware. And Paul says you're not really reading labels. If you disagree, I'd love to know what you look for in the way of labelling on food. 0418 226 576. Talking about this, of course, because new laws are enforcing the labelling of seafood, so you know its origins. Well, you're telling me that you do care about this sort of thing, that it is something that you look for. Sharon says, country of origin is a critical piece of information for me when it comes to seafood. Is it sustainably fished or farmed or not? Damien says, I like to buy locally sourced shellfish. They're beneficial for the environment in contrast to most things we buy because they use no watering or fertiliser and they filter and clear the seawater. Kim says, I use the Good Fish app, which is very useful information about sustainable seafood. Almost none of the seafood at the major supermarkets will be sustainable. It's going to be a big job to police the validity of the species offered in restaurants. It's hard enough in supermarkets. Lizette says, we've had country of origin for wine for decades. No different for this to happen with the food we consume. It's essential that for us who want to know where our food comes from, we have the choice and knowledge. Lizette says, I'm 100% grass-fed beef producer that sells direct at farmers markets. So, Paul, is this an opportunity for different seafood providers to maybe become a premium product? Like, the egg industry has been very successful at making free-range something that you look for instead of cage eggs. Is this something that could head in a similar direction?
It is. And if you think about kind of there, it's a really simple idea, which is free range versus caged eggs. I think that's a simple binary in a way. And what you will do is that, you know, price will have an effect. But we've also, what we've seen is that the pricing between free range and caged eggs has changed, but also the industry itself and the retailers, the big kind of supermarkets have made the availability is higher. There was a time, and I was buying free range eggs 20 years ago, when it was really hard to find free range eggs, but it changed the industry. And I think that's part of it, is that it may well have an effect over time. That's hard to predict. But I also kind of think what ends up happening is that we also have, I guess, a complexity around, you know, country of origin. You know, fish travel through the sea. They don't live in Australia. And so the implication is that if you have Australian industry going out and fishing for these fish, then it's prepared better and those kinds of things. I think that's part of the complexity around seafood itself. And it's interesting because, you know, I think when you ask some of the listeners to kind of say what information that they use, I think people do use information, but often what we do is that we use that information in a couple of different ways. One of them is choice justification, which is that I've bought this thing and I feel good about having bought it because it's Australian made. Or even there's this kind of effect called strategic ignorance, which is this idea that we avoid information when we think it might complicate the preference that we've already decided. So we've seen this in things like calorie counting, and people won't check calorie counts on meals that they actually really want to eat. And it might be the same kind of thing. It's like, oh, I'll just be strategic about not thinking about the origin of this seafood because I actually really need kingfish today.
So this chat is very specifically about this new regulation around seafood, but do you think this idea of country of origin might spill into other categories as a result?
I think country of origin is intuitively appealing. And I think, again, people pick it up and say, this is going to be something that changes behaviour. But what we've seen consistently over about 20 to 30 years of research is that it's very weak. As a consumer behaviour person, I would say if the end game here is to get people to buy products from that country, there are better ways that you can do that. But again, as a person who also works with regulators, there are difficulties in that because then you remove this perceived agency that consumers have, which is, well, I want to make my own choices. And we've talked about this so much, Tegan. We're really complicated creatures. Humans are complicated. And it often what we do is we rely on what's called folk psychology, a kind of gut feeling about this will work, with so much regulation, with so much lobbying. And in the end, it kind of satisfies the lobbying and the government regulation perspective, but it rarely changes consumer behaviour.
Well, that's heartening. Paul, thank you always.
Sorry. Every fortnight we have this conversation, don't we?
Paul, thanks as always for chatting with me.
All right. Cheers, Tegan.
Dr. Paul Harrison, Head of Consumer Behaviour at Deakin University. He joins me fortnightly for our segment, Buyer Beware. And thank you for your texts on this as well. Rick says, unfortunately, country of origin is a deceptive misnomer. It only tells you the actual country if it's Australia. I would find it much more useful if it told us exactly what country it came from. Then we could decide whether or not we want to buy from that country. And Ella says, yes, I have been wanting this information for so long, particularly because so much about where seafood comes from deeply affects its sustainability rating. Would love for the information to be even more specific with where it has come from within Australia. You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.